It's time for Simple Pleasures with Bira Moretti, where we look at aspects of Italian life. And today we're going to talk about how the Italian state came into existence. Vittorio Buffacci from UCC joins us now. Afternoon, Vittorio.
Buongiorno, Sean.
Now, Italy was, as I understand it, united under Rome. That's going back some time. What happened that Italy then kind of disintegrated into constituent parts?
Right, so Italy, you're absolutely right. It was united under the Roman Empire, and then with the collapse of the Roman Empire, Italy collapsed as such. And since then, it's been under foreign domination, the Austrians, the Spanish, the French. And it was only very recently, in 1861, that Italy actually was reunited. Which may surprise some of our listeners, although we have to remember that Germany itself was united in 1871. Mm. So it is part of 19th century European history.
Had it been a long-standing aspiration, though, to reunite Italy?
Well, that is an open question. Now, those who fought for the unification argue that, yes, there was always this strong sense of its spirit of Italian nationalism. But in fact, nationalism is very much a 19th century phenomenon. So when Napoleon was defeated in 1815, that sort of opened the door for this idea of, well, let's reunite Italy again. So the movement is known as Risorgimento, which is this idea of rising again. So they took advantage of this window of opportunity with Napoleon being defeated, and then Italy went back to the Austrian Empire. And then the sense was, okay, maybe we can bring back Italy again, go back to what it used to be. And this is going back, obviously, many, many centuries. You know, we used to be a united country with Rome as our capital. Now, in fact, Rome became a capital only in 1870. So it's a long process, very much part of that sense of hardcore nationalism, which is very much part of 19th century history. And there is some debate whether, in fact, it was a movement from below where people really wanted this, or whether it was very much led from above, from an elite. And I would argue that, like most populist movements, including the populism today, these are often led from elites who then use the masses as a way of getting their projects done.
Now, in the intervening period between the Roman Empire and the reunification of Rome, the various city-states all over Italy, did they become quite distinct and different to each other? And does that endure today?
Well, yes, no, very much so. There is a wonderful quote from a politician from the 1860s called Massimo D'Azeglio. And he said, we've made Italy, now we must make Italians. And this is a quote that many people use. And he was absolutely right. The easy part was to unify Italy. But what about the Italians? Because in fact, and this is where Italy is very much different from Ireland and many other countries, that process is not finished yet. We're still trying to make Italians, because the history of all the different city-states and all the different regions is profoundly different. I mean, you're trying to put together a territory that includes Sicily in the south and Venice and Trieste in the north. Now, what do they have in common, apart from, yes, once upon a time they were under the Roman Empire? So the history, the culture, the cuisine, and the language is profoundly different. I mean, this is something that perhaps people don't realize. The linguistic differences in Italy. So speaking as a Roman, if I travel 200 kilometers south of Rome and I go to Naples, I would struggle to understand the conversations between two Neapolitans. And if I go further south to Sicily, I would absolutely understand nothing. Hmm. And the same if I go up north to Venice. So the language obviously is important, because it is a reflection of culture.
Yeah. Are in all those different places, are they all speaking Italian or just wildly different variations of Italian?
Well, see, that's the thing. We're not talking about accents. We're talking about dialects.
Yeah.
So it's a mix. There is some Italian words, and then there are some words that are totally different. Your listeners may be familiar with those wonderful novels by Elena Ferrante, my brilliant friend. It's a story in four volumes, and it became a real literary phenomenon a few years ago.
It's on the TV now.
It's on the TV at the moment. Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen it. Yeah. I don't have those fancy channels. but the story starts in Naples after the Second World War. And what's interesting is that it follows the story of two little girls, and they go to school. And of course, at home, they speak Neapolitan. And in school, they're imposed to speak Italian. That's the proper language. And then they go back home and they speak Neapolitan. And there is the very strong sense of identity, which is not with Italy. Oh. It's with Naples. And then one of the girls becomes famous, and she goes to Florence and then to Milan, and people in Naples think, you know, what are you doing? You know, you're leaving Naples, but you know, there's in the sense of, you know, you're still in Italy, because actually that's what Italy is. And this is the 19th century.
And so presumably this has presented a problem for subsequent Italian governments and rulers to try and make Italians feel more Italian.
Well, absolutely. Starting from Mussolini. So Mussolini, as a dictator, as someone who came to power because of the strong sense of fascist nationalism, again, he had the problem. I'm the ruler of Italy, but who are the Italians? And what he did, he did what many dictators have done since, they used technology to their advantage. And at the time, obviously, that was the radio. So there is this sense in which you try to create Italians because they have to have a common denominator. So let's all listen to the same news. Let's all listen to the same language. So national school curriculum became very important. And again, it's a way of creating Italy. And until very recently, and I'm talking only about sort of 15 years ago or so, 20 years ago, there was a national military service in Italy, which every male Italian citizen at the age of 18, you had to spend a year in the military service. But the military service was important because it was a way of actually taking kids from one part of Italy and sending them to a barrack and the opposite side of Italy. And it was very much part of this idea of creating Italians. You know, let's have an Italian army. Let's bring the Italians together. So it's a common issue in Italian history. Yes, we have a country now. The Italians, I personally think Italians have a much stronger affinity with their region, with their city, and also with Italy.
Yeah. From the outside, most people regard it as one of the oldest countries in the world. But from the inside, it's still like quite a young country. Really.
It is very much a young country. It's interesting. I mean, the name itself, we don't even know exactly where the name Italia comes from. So it's one suggestion. And this is from Aristotle. And since I teach philosophy, who am I to argue with Aristotle? Mm. But he argues that there was an ancient king called Italus. And he was in the region of Calabria, which is the tip of the Italian boot. And that was the region that was known at the time as Italy, Italia. Possibly that's where we come from.
Who knows? Vittorio Bufacci, a senior lecturer in the Department of Philosophy in UCC. Vittorio, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean.